Welcome back. It's a Wednesday, the 27th day of December, 2023. I'm your host, Mark Hall, and I'm inclined to start off today's summary of the news from around the nation and the world with a paraphrase of a famous comment from a book by Ernest Hemingway, where a once rich man was asked, "How did you go bankrupt?" And the response, basically, slowly at first, and then all of a sudden. And that tends to describe the collapse of empires, too, especially as we're now seeing when they're destroyed ultimately by traitors from within. So let's start with a potpourri of headlines from literally all over the map. But ultimately, all these shotgun blasts should paint a clear picture. From the People's Republic of California, a whole bunch of Pizza Hut operators throughout the communist state announced Tuesday they'd be laying off hundreds of drivers before the new socialist 20-buck-an-hour minimum wage comes to effect on, what else, April Fool's Day next year. The new law, called Assembly Bill 1228, one of the most contentious of the year, and remember, folks, that's even in the land of fruits and nuts, was originally going to raise the minimum wage to $22 an hour and just put a wooden stake right in the heart of most of the restaurant industry in the state. But a compromise with the communists said, why don't we start off the process slowly at first? Problem is, too late. It's already well underway, if not terminal. Fast food companies and just about anybody else that knows what's going on with elementary economics have been warning of the dire consequences, and they're starting, right as you might expect, almost immediately. And they include not just massive layoffs, but more automation, higher prices, reliance on third-party companies, and of course other rounds of layoffs to follow later. Pizza Hut franchises announced on Tuesday they'd be eliminating all of their drivers as a cost-saving measure. That's 1,200 jobs right off the top. Meanwhile, other chain restaurants like McDonald's and Chipotle have announced higher prices. And Socialist Assembly Bill 1228 hasn't actually even taken effect yet. There is one more option, perhaps inevitable. Restaurants and businesses just shut down altogether, or, perhaps better, get the hell out of the state of California. Who knows, given what they're doing with EVs and shutting down the power grid, maybe the last one out won't even have to turn off the lights. Here's one I have no doubt we're going to be seeing a lot more of, or at least very similar. A steam pipe rupture in Midtown Manhattan at 5:30 a.m. has forced residents to close their windows, streets too, and caused massive traffic delays. What else is new? Well, the Daily Mail reports it's unclear exactly what caused the leak, but they're doing air quality testing. And they won't ask it, but a lot of folks online are. Was this just yet another sign of crumbling infrastructure and societal breakdown, or could it have been something even more nefarious? Well, with all the invaders in the city, maybe it's an early indication of further terror attacks still to come. My comment? Well, with either of those, you know they're not going to tell you. And with either of those, you know it's really simply going to get worse. Which almost certainly means both of those causes will end up feeding on each other. Two more signs of the time from very different areas. The Biden-Fuhrer regime owned Department of Defense, what a misnomer, were sued for canceling screenings of the anti-child trafficking film, and you now know why they were so offended. Jim Caviezel's movie, The Sound of Freedom, at military bases without any explanation. Do we really need one? Heritage Foundation's Project Oversight filed a lawsuit on Thursday compelling the Biden regime whorehouse and the DOD to produce all the documents related to the blockbuster film screening after Southcom, or the U.S. Southern Command, abruptly canceled them. And as you can guess, and we've already reported, they didn't say anything more than that. The legal action comes after the DOD refused to comply with the Oversight Project's FOIA, or Freedom of Information Act, request for those same documents. Said the lawsuit, as Southcom routinely works with partners in Central and South America, as well as in the Caribbean, it has a vested interest in ensuring that its personnel are well aware of the issues surrounding human trafficking in the region. And as you may recall, so-called journalist, almost like it was prearranged, your host can't help but think, claimed that the movie was things like QAnon embraced and, here's a real slap in the face, Christian faith-based amid a number of hit pieces and the bizarre but not surprising media-driven demonization campaign against the film. And how bad is it? Well, YouTube even began pulling reviews and interviews with people involved with Sound of Freedom in response to the media smear campaign. Southcom claimed that the reason behind their decision to cancel the screenings had to do with copyright and intellectual property laws. The Sound of Freedom producer, Eduardo Verastegui, remarked that he'd told Southcom it had no reason to be concerned about such, saying that he made the movie to, quote, raise awareness of the rampant sex trafficking in children happening throughout Latin America and the United States with the goal of ending this modern-day slave trade. Because Southcom's brave soldiers, he continued, worked to break up the transnational criminal organizations responsible for drug and and sex trafficking came to the U.S., we wanted to inspire and thank them for their service by offering a private screening off base. And he said, we made it 100% clear that there were no copyright concerns with Southcom hosting the movie while it was in theaters, and additionally even offered to send the filmmakers to meet the troops at the screenings. In fact, he said, if needed, I'm willing to get on a plane tomorrow with Tim Ballard, the real-life hero of the movie, to deliver a copy of the film to the troops so they can be re-energized in their efforts to combat child sex trafficking in the Americas. But he added, to our bewilderment, Southcom leadership has rejected our offer for three different shifting and unconvincing reasons, and we appreciate the Oversight Project's efforts to get to the bottom of it. We're hopeful, he said, that this matter will be resolved soon so that the troops can gather together and be touched like the tens of millions of other Americans and people around the world who've seen this film and are saying with one voice that God's children are not for sale, unquote. This other item, too, is more pushback against lawfare and the use of Big Brother's weaponization of various three-letter agencies. A group of 3,000 doctors, says a piece from Natural News, has filed a lawsuit against the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. Yeah, there's another misnomer. Over a mandate that would try to force them to provide children with so-called gender-affirming care. In other words, they want doctors, many of whom have pledged first do no harm, to do all kinds of satanically evil and ultimately irreversible harm to the most defenseless children. The suit was filed by the Alliance Defending Freedom on behalf of the American College of Pediatricians, the Catholic Medical Associates, and an OBGYN who focuses on adolescent care. The mandate, they say, expands the definition of the word sex in civil rights statutes to go beyond actual biology and encompass instead an individual's declared sexual orientation and so-called gender identity as well. And as a result, the group explains that doctors who take care of Medicaid patients and those who receive any type of, you know it, don't you, federal funding would therefore be mandated to give children seeking to transition, whether they know it or whether they even understand how permanent it might be, to a different sex, the laughably evil so-called gender-affirming care. And as you might suspect, a number of actual physicians and other medical professionals are morally opposed to it, for all the obvious reasons. Finally, here's a story that your host can pretty much guarantee we're going to hear more of, even if we're going to continue to hear more lies in the process. Or perhaps, to be more polite, we'll just call them omissions of certain uncomfortable truths. Let's look first at the headline from the Daily Mail's coverage. The U.S., it says, has shot down 12 suicide drones, 3 anti-ship ballistic missiles, and 2 land attack cruise missiles fired by the Iran-backed Houthi rebels in the southern Red Sea over just a 10-hour period. I get the impression we're supposed to think that's very impressive. Says the piece, the attacks were intercepted by the USS Laboon and F-A-18 Super Hornets from the Eisenhower Carrier Strike Group. Other carriers, too, have all taken down drones in recent weeks and provided help to commercial vessels being threatened by the ever-increasing number of inexpensive, unmanned suicide drones. CENTCOM reports that there was, quote, no damage to ships in the area or reported injuries. But that doesn't seem to be the whole story, it turns out. Here's one from Politico that tells a bit more that you don't seem to hear from most of the Waystream coverage. The headline says, a $2 million missile versus a $2,000 drone. The Pentagon is now increasingly worried over the costs of these Houthi attacks. How many more of these striking successes, in other words, can we afford? Their piece begins that the U.S. Navy reports destroyers have shot down 38 drones and multiple missiles in the Red Sea over just the past 2 months. As American warships, as the Politico piece, rack up kills against the Houthi drones and missiles in the Red Sea, Pentagon officials are now increasingly alarmed, not just at the threat to U.S. naval forces as well as international shipping in the area, but the growing cost of keeping them safe. Why? Well, because these expensive naval missiles, which cost up to $2.1 million a shot, being used to destroy basically cheap drones. Let's see here. I know this is complex math, especially for the DOD officials who can't tell a boy from a girl, but $2.1 million divided by 2,000, let's see. Well, let's just call it 1,000 to 1. So it costs the American taxpayers 1,000 times as much to take out one drone as it costs the Houthis, who really probably aren't even paying for them anyway, to keep on pumping them in. What do you bet their commanders are saying, hey, this is a game we can play all day? This obscene cost differential is a growing concern, according to at least three, and you can guess they're unnamed, DOD officials. They, like others interviewed for the story, says Politico, were granted anonymity to describe sensitive operations and internal deliberations, said one DOD official. The cost offset is not on our side. You know what, folks? I can't help but think that's a bit like somebody claiming, you know, the Biden-Fuhrer, the unelected president just isn't quite at the top of his game anymore. But here's an actual quote. Even if we do shoot down all their incoming missiles and drones, the costs are heavily in their favor. We said one of them, the U.S. need to start looking at systems that can defeat these that are more in line with the very inexpensive costs they're expending in order to attack us. The problem here, folks, is that this corridor out of the Red Sea to the Suez Canal is one of the most important to international trade in the entire planet. Says a piece from the Burning Platform, it's like this. The Houthis occupy an area along the narrowest part of the Red Sea that is the most important shipping corridor in the world, responsible for 12% of international trade and almost one-third of global container traffic. When the movement of ships is disrupted, and it has been, along this waterway, insurance premiums skyrocket, prices on retail merchandise rise, and oil prices go through the roof. And doesn't that make the Biden-Fuhrer happy, you gotta figure? This is why Western powers are committed, or I guess you'd have to ask, are they really, to keeping these shipping lanes open at all times, whatever the cost. Why, CNN says this. The attacks have forced some of the world's biggest shipping and oil companies to suspend transit through one of the world's most important maritime trade routes, which could potentially cause a shock to the global economy. Wait a minute, as big as the pandemic? Probably not. How about as big as blowing up the Nord Stream pipelines? Yeah, maybe bigger than that. On Monday, they added, oil giant BP became the latest company to announce it would be pausing its shipments through the Red Sea. And as you've heard here, folks, a number of shipping companies, including MSC, Maersk, Euronav, and the Evergreen Group, have all said they're avoiding the Suez Canal as militants target cargo vessels. And instead, ships will have to take the far longer and costlier journey around the southern coast of Africa to reach their destinations. Even though, say a number of stories, the Houthis have repeatedly claimed that ships not bound for Israel and their ports will not be attacked. Well, folks, I guess that means unless they're U.S. carrier groups. But here's the real point. It's not at all being covered by the Daily Mail. I went through their article and noted that the word cost, or even the symbol for the dollar sign, doesn't appear anywhere in that somewhat lengthy piece, but they do have a lot of pictures. Meanwhile, Yemen's Houthi militia, say a number of military analysts, have shown how a small army can take on the American empire and win. What they've demonstrated, in other words, is what's called a force multiplier, allowing a much weaker military to punch above its weight. Now, I guess it would be inappropriate to move on without at least noting that a lot of people online are asking the obvious question, hey, why is it the Biden regime gives billions of dollars to Iran, then turns around and sends our carrier groups into places where American taxpayer bucks are being used to pay for all kinds of weapons, including cheap ones, but undoubtedly more expensive ones too, that are fired right back at their own soldiers, sailors, and Marines? Well, here's some propaganda that may at least provide a bit of the answer. Keeping international commerce flowing is one of the U.S. Navy's primary missions, says DOD Trader-in-Chief Lloyd Austin, and he is taking this crisis seriously. And I'll admit, folks, that gave me a little bit of pause, because international commerce is one of the U.S. Navy's primary missions? What, does that mean it's right up there with woke training and pushing LGBTQIA on everybody that dares to put on a uniform? One thing's for sure, any of those rank a hell of a lot higher than defending this nation's borders. Item, this one comes from Natural News, too. There's a doozy of a clip, say their editor, circulating online, showing a guy in an obvious red MAGA hat supposedly committing what they call a hate crime against what else? Well, in this case anyway, the transgender movement. And while the validity of the clip is clearly unclear, given past events involving federal authorities, agent provocateurs, and yeah, the Fed surrection itself, not to mention the Whitmer kidnapping scam in Michigan, it raises suspicions about all of this potentially being a government staged hoax, a la Jussie Smollett. Or dare I say it, Oklahoma City, 9/11, Las Vegas, and well, you pretty much name it. Because, after all, the very idea of someone seriously wearing a MAGA hat to go out and commit a hate crime seems so outlandishly absurd that it almost begs the question of who would do that, unless they're getting paid by somebody who hates everybody who wears any hat like that. Natural News links a clip of what is said to be, quote, a Molotov cocktail thrown into a Tulsa donut shop hosting a drag queen art show. And the comments pretty well make the case that nobody but nobody is buying it. Another Democrat hoax, said one. MAGA supporters are smarter than this, said another. This is no Trump supporter. It's an Antifa-trained comrade if I ever saw one, said a different one. LOL, says yet another. Nobody would be stupid enough to wear a MAGA hat and do that. And one of them even pointed out that the fact that the Fed provocateur can't even throw is a dead giveaway. How about this one? This is probably the summary. They made sure that the perp wore a face diaper and gloves, but also made sure to wear a brand new MAGA hat. Only a brainwashed liberal would believe all of this. And therein lies the rub, folks. I said nobody but nobody would believe this, and I meant anybody with half a brain, which ultimately means most of the left woke nutcases are probably drinking the Bud Light here. Oh, yeah, and as we'll talk about over coming months, guess what the AI overlords are being programmed to believe, too? Because if this is what they're fed, you know the old expression, garbage in, garbage out. From there, let's move on to consequences in an entirely different arena. I've got one piece that'll set the stage, courtesy of the New Eastern Outlook, Phil Butler, and LouRockwell.com, asking, has the U.S. almighty fiat dollar already struck the BRICS iceberg? And as of this writing, it begins, U.S. dollar reserves have fallen by 6.5% as foreign central banks cut ties with the currency. The BRICS countries, especially those in the global south, are leading the charge to depart from the decades-long dominance of the American currency, while China and Japan's central bank shares now show the most significant rise in central banks. Interestingly, they say the euro is just slightly behind in losing share in the world currency market. Now, you know where this is headed. I've talked about it, but here's how the author puts it. If BRICS stop using the U.S. dollar, there will likely be a financial disaster in the United States. Well, I said it this way. There'll be a financial disaster in the United States. This will just be the precipitating event, perhaps a bit sooner. What with hyperinflation wreaking havoc across all sectors in the U.S.? And that's arguably the next step, folks, after Bidenflation. However, losing the dollar as the medium of exchange worldwide is not the most significant danger, says the author, for the American hegemony. Collaboration and stronger ties between the BRICS and emerging nations are essential. I guess that means once a nation becomes non grata, it gets kicked out of the international party. A professor at the University of Nairobi offered this via the China Daily. BRICS is at a watershed in terms of global economic organizations, with less developed countries now having access to technology from more advanced ones and having an opportunity to diversify their exports and gain access to new sources of funding. And that professor suggested member countries strengthen intergroup collaboration in a number of fields, including cultural exchanges, science. That would be the real kind, folks, as opposed to the crap that's now being published under the Fauci rule and the one for the United States, and various other forms of technology. And on this level, once the partnership begins and accelerates, the so-called Global South will end up being much more influential on the financial and geopolitical scales. In other words, this is a change of leadership, and again, it indicates what happens when a nation intentionally self-destructs and goes from first world to third world. That, says the story, is a great appeal for joining BRICS, because the U.S. and its allies have no comparable leverage. The BRICS nations now account for 37% of the world's GDP, while the G7 only squeaks out 30%. And what with the UAE, Saudi Arabia, and Iran now joining the group, oil production on Earth will be firmly in the hands of BRICS members. The deep state wants it deep-sixed anyway, remember. And when you factor in the 40 or more countries that are already interested in joining the BRICS, or the 16 that have applied for membership, this situation for the hegemony gets even darker. Former IMF executive director and former VP of the New Development Bank, Brazilian economist Paulo Nogueira Batista Jr., was quoted by Modern Diplomacy as saying, the possibility of a common BRICS currency being presented at next year's summit in Russia is distinct. And once that happens, all that stands in the way of the nations of BRICS overcoming the current dollar supremacy is, quote, developing a multilateral system of settlements, in other words, an alternative to SWIFT, your host interjects here, so that financial flows can be directed to priority industries in the developing countries. Unquote. And Russia, China, and others have been working on it for quite a while, as we have been reporting here, literally for several years during the development. Concludes the author, our titanic mistake as a nation is now obvious, and the iceberg has been hit. It's called BRICS. Hal Turner's radio show reminds us of a recent quote from what's called Putin's brain in Russia, Alexander Dugin, who posted an ominous message on social media just hours before, entitled, "The Apocalypse is Now," referring initially to the ongoing Israeli-Hamas conflict and the involvement of Iran in the Middle East. Dugin made clear how he sees developments taking place that are bringing about, present tense, the big war. He said, quote, "The big war will come to Middle East, maybe a bit later, but it will. Houthis will not stop. Ships will not enter any more Red Sea. The oil prices will go up. Iran will respond to provocations. Collapse of Israel is inevitable. Call it as you wish," says Dugin. "We call it end time agenda. Apocalypsis it is now. Right now or a bit later. Maybe not yet, but soon," unquote. Says Hal Turner, this is one of the sharpest and most influential minds in Russia saying it openly. This is not good. Which brings me to a quote from another well-known socialist, this one a bit closer to home, and arguably a bit more socialist than Alexander Dugin. Legendary leftist and Nobel economic laureate Robert Shiller, who's broken with the left and warned what most of us have been saying for quite a while now. The administration is on a really asinine course that's going to be self-destructive. And he warns that confiscation of Russian assets would be cataclysmic for the almighty fiat U.S. dollar, i.e., the dollar's standing as an international reserve currency would be jeopardized if the West confiscates frozen Russian assets to aid Ukraine. This from Nobel Prize-winning economist and Yale University, where else, Professor Robert Shiller, in an interview with Italian news outlet La Repubblica, published over the weekend. According to Shiller, seizing those assets would give the global community, especially countries which, like Russia, quote, convert their savings into dollars and thus entrust them in the reliable, sick hands of Uncle Sam, unquote. Well, that would give them grounds to doubt the stability and the safety and reliability of U.S. currency, to which all your hosts can add, since I don't have a Nobel Prize, duh. He said this, "I can't convince myself," and remember, he's already far left, folks, and what does that tell you? "I can't convince myself that this confiscation of Russian assets is the right way. In addition to the fact that this would be confirmation for the Russian leader that what is happening in Ukraine is a proxy war, it would," he said, "paradoxically turn against America and the entire West." And how's that, folks, for a leftist coming right out and admitting what everybody except the left has known forever? Adding that the situation would likely, quote, turn into a cataclysm for the current dollar-denominated economic system. And, notes the piece here, courtesy of RT.com, the U.S., EU, and their allies have frozen roughly $300 billion worth of Russian foreign exchange reserve assets since the beginning of last year as part of a sanctions campaign over the Ukraine conflict. Western nations have been mulling ways to use their funds to aid Ukraine for the better part of a year, and while no specific plan has so far been finalized, says RT, last week's media reports indicate that the U.S., meaning the Biden Führer, or those who are pulling his strings, recently stepped up discussions on this matter with its allies. And get this, folks, Washington reportedly wants to legalize, how's that for a propagandized term, I think the right term is weaponize, the confiscation of Russian assets by recognizing Western countries as injured parties in the Ukraine conflict. And I guess you'd have to say former communists certainly seem to know theft when they see it. I guess I could add that if Americans would just figure that out, maybe they'd begin to start to do something before the rest of the world does, and it's way too late, although we may already be at that point. Hey, that's got to do it for today, folks. We're out of time. Thanks for being with us, and may Yahuwah bless you and yours.